What's up, everybody? Did you miss us last week?
What happened? Missed us
as well. Well, since Ethan's not here, I think we can feel free to rat him out.
We can. Do we really want to kick the guy while he's down?
Ethan decided to not talk college football with the boys and instead watch The Summer I Turned Pretty.
And that's pretty amazing that Ethan chose not to talk, because that's one of his favorite things to do.
He loves doing that, especially
like,
while
I'll
Corey's
be like making
talking.
A point, albeit sometimes really terrible point, and he'll cut me off and be like, "That's a terrible point." I'm like, "Well, you didn't let me finish my terrible point." And then sometimes I'll make a good point, and he will tell me that it was a good point, but I still didn't finish the point.
We will miss him this episode, though. There may be some dead air,
some
just because
dead space.
We're used to listening to him, because it's normally being filled. But hey, if you love Big Ten football, you came to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Again, sorry we missed last week. We will kind of do a cumulative review as we go through some of the bigger brands and teams in the Big Ten. Also, we cannot go this whole episode without talking about some of the bigger games that have happened around the country, too. We had Catholics versus Convicts. We had Alabama, Florida State. We had Arizona State, Mississippi State, which was insane. The ending to that game, absolutely wild. So college football has already delivered. And honestly, going into week two, I don't know if you felt the same way, Corey. I was looking at the slate for the day, and I was like, week two is a bit of a letdown compared to all the games and the high-profile matchups we had in week one. Week two delivered, bro. Like, there were some nasty games in week two. You had the border war, Kansas and Missouri, then Arizona, Mississippi State happened. Michigan, Oklahoma was still a big game, even though it was slow at points.
Yeah.
I feel like something else happened.
Something else did happen because the University of South Florida Bulls went into Gainesville and absolutely just pushed Billy Napier into a locker and shoved it closed. I mean, if we were to create a segment of biggest takeaway or something silly along those lines, USF, shades of the wild and crazy 2007 season where they were like, they went all the way up to number two in the rankings. They've gotten some noise just based off of the way that they have played, and especially going into Gainesville and winning. Now they have another chance to beat another in-state rival in Miami this week. They're already in the top 25. People are talking. If they are able to pull off another upset this week, that is a tall task. I mean, I'm rooting for it. Absolutely. I think we need to have a little bit more parity in college football, especially with the transfer portal era that's going on. But if you have a group of five representative, not only just because like, oh, you need a group of five representative because, you know, we want this like a full whatever. We want this like everybody to feel like they have a shot. This is unlike anything that we've seen, because they would have beaten two top 25, in this case, a top 10 opponent on the road. And if they aren't in the top 10, I'll say it, maybe even in the top five, what are we doing here in the ranking systems? Like, this is my question for you. If USF pulls off the upset again, do they deserve to be in the top five? Why or why not?
If they pull off the upset again, yes, they deserve to be in the top five, because nobody, even teams that are also undefeated at that point, and I kind of need to flip through the week three matchups maybe before I say this, but I can't think of a possibility where there would be five other teams that are undefeated and have a better body of work than USF at this point of the season if they go into Hard Rock and beat Miami. Did you see the AP voter that is being roasted for her vote? And then she posted a video on Twitter basically saying, oh, well, there's so many voters that like individual votes don't matter that much. It all averages out at the end. And it's just a fun thing for us to do. Like, she made this video in response to the hate and, in the words of Dan Lanning, poured gasoline on the fire.
You can't actually say that, because what she said is what people were actually thinking. It's like,
right, but now we know. We've heard it from Ethan the horse's mouth.
And wow, look at Ethan's not even here, and his presence is reigning true. He is always, and I brought him up.
And you brought him up.
He said that the AP poll is an absolute joke and does not matter. And if he were on right now, Lord bless him, he would just be yelling and screaming and pointing towards that video. Because number one, it makes no sense. We talked about this too when Alabama lost to Florida State. And Florida State, by the way, has looked great for 2 weeks. And like, good for them, because what they went through last year was abysmal. However, there were arguments that like, oh, like Alabama's still going to be ahead of Florida State in the rankings somehow. Thankfully, it didn't happen, but I think they were only separated by like one spot. Like Alabama was just behind and Florida State was just ahead of them. So if we are not taking head-to-head matchups seriously this early in the season, why on earth would we take head-to-head matchups seriously at the end of the year as well? It's like, oh, it's too early, the whole body work. Like, I understand. And we had this discussion as well. Like, early season matchups don't give you the whole like view into the body of work just because it's like the first test. However, those games still do matter. Like, somebody did win, somebody did lose, and like a team like Clemson who loses to LSU at home, that's going to be held against them, you know, towards the end of the year if they tack on another loss or two, maybe. Like, they win the ACC again, but they're a three-loss ACC team, yeah, you're not going to get a bye. Like, it's just not going to happen. Now, then you look at a team like Southern Florida, or South Florida, excuse me, or is it Southern Florida? Or is it interchangeable? I'm trying to put some respect on the Bulls' names. So I'm so sorry.
Bulls' name, bro.
If you don't credit them a win against Florida on the road, and as it stands right now, a hypothetical win against Miami, and they lose a game in conference, which happens literally all the time, unless you're the Michigan Wolverines, then you don't lose in conference in the way of the college football playoff. And they're like, oh, well, they had a bad loss to Tulane. It's like, but they beat two top 25 teams on the road. Oh, is that the beginning? Okay, well, your AP voter said that that didn't matter anyway. So, like, what are we arguing here? Like, what is... Baseball has done something right, and maybe I've mentioned this in previous episodes, where they have tried to find like a cumulative stat to evaluate players, and that's WAR, wins above replacement. And essentially all it teaches you, or all it tells you, is like, how many wins does this individual player account for if you replaced that player with just a minor league average player? Like, what would be the win total difference? And like, anyone who's above a three is a really, really good player. We need to figure out like the universal ranking system for these teams, because we're going to get more discussions of Joe Schmo lady who's like, eh, the votes don't really matter. It's like, whose line is it anyway? The points don't matter and the votes don't matter either.
Well, to keep this from turning into solely a UCF USF podcast.
USF would be totally stands. Opposed to. That's what we are.
Let's zoom in on the Big Ten from the first 2 weeks, and then we can zoom out and talk about some of the other stuff. I want to get into Bama, Florida State, and things like that. So let's talk about the biggest game that's happened in the Big Ten so far. Ohio State, Texas, week one. Ohio State beats Texas 14-7. I think you come out of that game with the main story obviously being Arch. And Arch stunk in that game. Now, you sleep on it, you wake up the next day, you can talk about things like, oh, we, you know, Ohio State's defense, really good, right? Like, Saiyan did his job, didn't turn the ball over, distributed. But I think overall, there were some plays to be made by Arch and Texas that weren't. Some gimme throws that you think, God, given the hype, even if he's making a start in a tough environment on the road for the first time, that's the kind of guy that should be making those throws. That's kind of what I come away thinking. Obviously, I don't think playoff hopes are dead for Texas. Ohio State is right where they want to be. They're primed to make another big run, and they're actually, they have the shortest odds to win the title right now in the sports books. But I think there were some things that you saw out of Ohio State too that you go, they're not invincible. Like, Texas held them to under 3 yards a carry. Jeremiah Smith didn't have a great game. So you think, well, there's chinks in the armor at Ohio State. But then you can also say, oh, they didn't have their best Jeremiah Smith game and they didn't have their best run game and they still beat the University of Texas. So that's also a scary thought. You can kind of look at both sides of that coin.
Yeah, that's when, in a game like that, that's where you, in my opinion, that's where you just lean on the side of, what's the word that I'm looking for? It's a really simple word. This is really bad that I'm thinking of this on a live podcast, but reputation. Okay, you lean on the side of reputation because Ohio State has done this all the time. They reload, they retool, they have a huge season, they win a Big Ten, in this case they win a national championship, and then they just don't skip a beat. This is what has made Michigan fans crazy, because to Tressel, to Urban, to Day, they haven't skipped a beat, really, as far as being in the national championship title conversation.
You forgot Fickell.
He was interim.
They skipped one beat
in like what, 20 years, it seems like. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And
so it's just maddening. But the reason that they have been able to sustain that, they got a top 5 brand in college football. They're always near the top in recruiting, and their coaches have been outstanding for the most part. It's just like, as a rival fan, you're sitting there and waiting and trying to pick apart what's like, oh, they only had 200 yards of total offense in that game and Saiyan didn't really do much. Okay, well, they did enough to win the game. And that's what you're looking for at the end of the day. You don't care about how much did you win by, you just care if you've won. And at the end of the day, I think any team in college football or any fan in college football would trade their team's success for what Ohio State has been able to sustain over the past 30 years, the past 20 years, even the past 10 years, I would think.
It does suck watching them do this over and
I'll
over
tell you
again.
What, and this is completely analysis free, because maybe I'll dive into that a little bit more, but like, Saiyan's a 5-star that they pulled from Alabama that they got because Saban retired. So it's not like this guy's a bum off the street. He was still a 5-star recruit. They won a national championship with Cardale Jones. I've talked about that, I think, 1,000 times. It's like, this guy was 3rd on the depth chart, and they were able to get the most. This is what they do. This is in their DNA. That kind of stuff just doesn't go away, especially when you have the right type of guys at the helm. Like, Ryan Day can't beat Michigan. Well, he still won a national championship in the midst of that. So it's like, you're in a really tough spot in what you are looking for as an Ohio State fan. If he loses again this year, it's crazy, but people are going to think that seat's hot. Like, legitimately speaking, no. Why on earth would you fire that guy? He's lost to 2 Big Ten teams in his past entire coaching tenure. But I digress. The thing that pisses me off the most, Matt Patricia, who was you have to figure out a worse word than dumpster fire in the city of Detroit. He comes there and now everybody's like, oh, Matt Patricia's schemes were so advanced and they put Arch Manning in a body bag and blah, 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 blah. Well, he was coaching cantaloupes in Detroit. He had a cantaloupe for a brain, because whatever he did in Detroit was, it sent that franchise back 80 years, it seemed. That guy couldn't find his way out of a paper bag in Detroit, Michigan. And then he goes to Ohio State and he's like, oh, he is the most incredible football mind of it. Like, please, if Matt Patricia finds any amount of championship success outside of a bowl win, I am going to take a long walk off a short bridge. And I'm not kidding.
I don't have the same hate towards Matt Patricia.
You know what?
Although
you should.
I did.
You should
use...
because it hurts me so much. And if you say you're my friend, you should feel upset on my behalf as well.
I mean, beyond Patricia, feels like the Lions kind of missed their 2-year window.
This is not
it?
A probe. I'm using this podcast to escape from that. Do not do this to me right now. Why are you bringing this up?
Crazy.
Yeah, the Steelers are 45-year-old Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback.
Doesn't matter. We wanted a quarterback whose age is as close to the Super Bowl year as possible. That's how you win.
I'm going to hang up. I'm going to end this podcast early.
Okay, so Ohio State is Ohio State. That's kind of the conclusion that you're coming to. The defense is nasty, maybe even nastier than expected, given the defensive line attrition. And Saiyan will come along. I mean, in week two, Saiyan put up nasty
Grambling
numbers.
State.
Obviously, it was against a very inferior. Yeah, it was against Grambling. Some of the TikToks that people were
posting.
I think
the coach even
Grambling
said, like,
hilarious.
He was talking about like their bands or something like that. And he's like, we
yeah,
know what's
yeah,
going to happen.
He was.
I mean, that's demoralizing. Yeah. It's take your check and go home. Like, it's terrible.
Yes, he was that gift. It's like, time to bring me my money. Except it's after a loss. He's like, just give me the bag and I'm out of here. You can actually pay us and we won't play. Just give us the money and you can take one in the win column. But okay, so I think Ohio State of the Big Ten teams has the best win so far, for sure. Teams that have looked the most dominant, I think Oregon takes the cake. So obviously the level of opponent is not nearly as close as what Ohio State has beaten in Texas, but Oregon is demolishing teams most recently.
Listen,
Oklahoma
I wish
State.
Ethan were here right now because you guys were giving me some heat about saying that Oregon is a juggernaut. I didn't say juggernaut, but like, they came in their first year in the Big Ten and they proved to you why they can compete and they can be a serious, serious playoff contender. Everybody is playing their cupcakes and scoring 56, 70. I think Florida State dropped 70 on somebody, or USC dropped 70 on somebody in the first 2 weeks. Oregon dropped 60-plus points on a Power 5 opponent. Now, albeit Oklahoma State is not very good this year, but traditionally Oklahoma State is a team and a program that gives some people some fits. I'm looking at you, Oklahoma. Like, I was shocked to see that score. And we're not having any discussion anymore about, is Dante Moore going to be enough? Is Dan Lanning just all talk and no show? Like, guy won the Big Ten, went undefeated last year. And he's not skipping a beat either with a brand new quarterback, a quarterback who has not led the NCAA in starts for a career. I'll mind you there. And I think it's just, you have to put Oregon in a similar conversation, but at just a lower level than Ohio State, because they've been doing this for a long time across multiple conferences now. And if we are just ready to crown Penn State as the champion and the darling of the Big Ten, there are two huge reasons of why they won't win, and they're both on Penn State's schedule. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Do not pin any Oregon Duck hate on me, though. Ethan may have been spewing some of that nonsense. I picked them to win the Big Ten last year, and I was right. I put money on them to win the Big Ten last year, and I was right. I love Dan Lanning. Some people do not love Dan Lanning. I've got a buddy who is not a fan of Dan Lanning and feels like there's been a bit of a premature crowning of Dan Lanning. I don't necessarily agree with that because it's not like the man hasn't had any success. Like, he won a Big Ten championship. He's consistently in the playoff discussion. Dan Lanning feels like one of those coaches that it's not if, it's when.
I would agree with that too. And it's not, I think you said it exactly right. It's not like he hasn't won anything. We talked about like him getting two shots at Washington and blowing both of them. Like, these kind of things happen, like especially in college football. And what was his response the next year? Yeah, undefeated, new conference, and winning the conference title. Like I understand the Rose Bowl game was really disappointing for Oregon fans against Ohio State, but number one, you already beat them once before, and number two, that was your first loss of the year, and it came in the college football playoff. And it's not, like, oh, he can't win the big game. Like, he beat Penn State too. Like, the ultimate resume booster that is Penn State, because they're always a good team and they're always around, and and in a, what should
always good enough to boost the resume, never good enough to beat you.
Exactly. If anything, it was a Penn State home game in Indianapolis. Like, Penn State fans showed up in droves, and you take home the title. Like, it's. We are not speaking about Dan Lanning without him having some trophies and some big wins in his trophy case. Like the big brain play against Ohio State, having the too many men on the field. Like, he was like, we practiced that.
Yep.
And he was like kind of secretive about it, because it was like, oh, we thought about that. This could be a situation, and this is something that we, and then they go ahead and change the rule. It's like, the guy's not dumb and he's a great coach. So I'd be horrified to play the guy. Doesn't matter, home or away. Like, he's got the juice, at least a little bit. And he
gives some of the best pregame speeches I've ever heard in my
entire life. And guys love playing for him too. And we seem to forget in the NIL era that Oregon has an unlimited fund.
Unlimited.
And 1,000 jerseys. Like, if you're, I mean, come on. If you're a 5-star, or like, I'm gonna check out Oregon for a little bit. Let's see what's going on there.
Their jersey game has gotten nice. It felt like it was a little out of control there for a minute, and now
they did what every team does when they kind of need to reset, and that's go to the throwbacks. And the throwback jerseys have been flawless.
Oh yeah. Oh, they're so clean, bro. They're so clean. So let's go from Oregon to Penn State. Again, this is another situation, actually a worse situation compared to Oregon, because Penn State's played even a worse schedule. They beat up on Nevada 46-11. They beat up on Florida International 34-0. It won't get better next week. They'll play Villanova. And then they will have a bye. And then they will play Oregon. So we've still got a few weeks until we see James Franklin take this team up against someone who's actually going to push them to their limit. So it is very hard, no matter how good they look, to sit back and just put faith in the Penn State Nittany Lions. Now, that being said, if you listened to our preseason predictions, I do think Penn State is going to win the Big Ten. I don't know if we haven't actually done national championship or playoff predictions yet. I fully expect Penn State to be in the national championship game. I think they're that kind of team. But even against FIU, like, that was a game I was not planning to turn on. And then I am scrolling through Twitter while I'm watching the rest of the slate, and people are saying, whoa, Penn State and FIU is close. And I'm like, oh God, you got to be kidding me. Like, at halftime, they were up 10-0. And it's like, good Lord, Penn State, just don't play with your food, you know? Like, you got to eat and move on. So, again, it's going to be a few weeks till we see them actually tested by somebody. So it's hard to say anything definitive about Penn State
before that happens. I've been very negative about Penn State, but I'll do this in two waves. Number one, when, again, it's your team and you're very passionate about it, Michigan in the national championship run had the scare, I guess you could call it, against Bowling Green. JJ had three interceptions. They didn't look like this, you know, this dominant team against a MAC and very much an inferior opponent. But at the end of the day, you're like, just win the game. Like, this is a game that doesn't matter. And at some point, like, I don't want to hold this against any of these players, but like, when you're that good and you have these games that are just like stepping stones to get to, you know, the big game on the schedule, not talking about like a trap game, because like, that's where you can get really scary. And we've seen teams come really, really close. Like Maryland, ultimate trap game opponent, like given Ohio State scares in the past, given Michigan scares in the past, and given, you know, Penn State scares in the past as well. So I think there is a level when you are so good and so talented, especially at this college football level, and you're this early in the season where, like, yeah, you kind of do play with your food a little bit, just because it's like, this game doesn't matter. We're going to win this game. We could win it with one arm tied behind our back and our second stringers. You know, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be pretty, but we just want to get out and get healthy. So I think there's a level of that because of the expectation and because of that shiny number two in front of Penn State's name. So I don't know. I don't want to look too much into it, because at the end of the day, the only thing that matters is, can they win the big one? They've got Oregon traveling to them for the first Big Ten game of the year. They win that game, all bets are off. I know it's a home game. They get it. I believe it is the whiteout game. It should be if it's not. I'm looking at the schedule. Great question. Right now. It is 7:30, so it has to be the whiteout.
Oh,
Oregon gets their first taste of a whiteout game on the East Coast. So you drag West Coast team all the way out there. I don't know. And Penn State has an extra week to prepare for that too. I mean, Villanova, if the opponent wasn't Villanova, I would say watch out for that being a trap game. Like, let down, like, oh, it got a little dicey. Like, they only won by like 17 instead of like 34. It's almost like Penn State's schedule is just it's like opening the door for them. It's like, this, here it is, the stars are aligning. Albeit the only thing that's cumbersome is that they got to go to Ohio State again, but you got to slay the giant at some point, and Ohio State is their giant. And whether you have to do it at home or on the road, like, you have to do it. But you get past Oregon, you go to UCLA, who is terrible. Then you go to Iowa, which gives them fits, but Iowa still has yet to figure out the forward pass in the year of our Lord, 2025. Then it's Ohio State, Indiana, Michigan State, Nebraska, and Rutgers, all of which I think we would be comfortable with them winning. If you get past Ohio State, it's really just coast. It's the end of the year.
It is, for sure. Okay, let's talk about the first and really only big loss that has happened in the conference, and that is Michigan going on the road to Oklahoma in a what I believe was a top 20 matchup between the two, and John Mateer and company took it to Michigan. The final score would not necessarily suggest that it was a blowout. And the score really never was a blowout, but it felt like it was going to turn into that at some point. I feel like I've gone first with all these games, Corey. I'll let you share your opinions on what
this one's a little tough because Michigan played really bad, and there's no other way about it. They played bad, but at the same time, like, they didn't, because like, you can pinpoint specific plays where it goes Michigan's way and the ball game looks completely different. The missed sack, not being able to get off the field on the first drive. I think you had like two or three third and longs, and you couldn't do anything about it. And then the Achilles heel of Michigan football is a mobile running quarterback, and they just kept running Mateer and kept running Mateer. It was all reliable, right? But as far as that, explosive plays go, I feel like they kept that pretty limited. Maybe one play, one or two plays over 30 yards. The offensive line was decimated. Underwood couldn't get any sort of pass off outside of just sheer talent. But even in the midst of that, you had Haynes pop off on that 75-yard touchdown run on like the second play in the second half. So like it was like all the pieces couldn't be put together. And because of that, you played a really, really bad and sloppy football game. I'm disappointed. I'm not necessarily concerned, because as far as like your Big Ten goals, if you're Michigan, are still ahead of you. And you don't play another ranked opponent until the end of the year, which is the big one against Ohio State. And if you get past Nebraska, I think you feel pretty good, but you're going to be without Sharon and Biff Pogge as your head coach, which a lot of Michigan slappies are excited about, but he was not good at Charlotte. So it better be more of a figurehead type of head coaching thing, and letting the coordinators do what they do. And have Underwood take over if he can. So it was tough for me. It was like I saw some good things, but the really bad things, getting pushed around in the offensive line, getting pushed around in the trenches, and then making just like the boneheaded mistake or letting a sack slip from your fingers was really sad, I would say.
Yeah, I think you used two words that I'm going to echo or maybe waffle between: disappointed and concerned. Like, okay, you can be disappointed in the result of the game, but are you concerned for the team going forward? It's hard for me to say whether or not I'm concerned, because health was such a big issue in this game. Like, it wasn't the only issue, but you went into the game not healthy in your secondary, missing Rod Moore. You went into the game not healthy in your receiving core, losing your starting tight end, who, I mean, the receiving core at Michigan is already shallow talent-wise. And then you lose your best receiving option, and then it's just, I mean, you're in the kiddie pool. It is hard to survive. But then you lost people during the game. You lost an offensive guard during the game. Zeke Berry, another guy in the secondary, got hurt during the game. So they were being decimated, and you were missing Jayshon Barham at linebacker because of the targeting call from last week. So accumulation of injuries obviously is going to hurt you going into a tough road environment and stealing one. The bigger concern for me was just the offensive game plan sucked, man. And I don't know if it was because of the personnel, the kind of game plan that they called, but on offense, at one point in the night, if I had seen one more wide receiver slip or bubble screen, I was going to walk into traffic. Like, they called three or four of those plays. And the thing that was pissing me off about it was that those plays were putting Oklahoma in a position where their defense could play downhill and just attack. You were not stretching them at all. So no matter if it was a run play or a pass play, they felt like they could get downhill and deliver hits and be the unit on the field that was determining the intensity of the play. Michigan was not in a position where they were able to attack Oklahoma's defense. Again, some of it personnel driven, but you cannot just sit back there and bubble screen your way to a top 20 road win. It's just not going to happen.
I think that plays into that they had so few time, like so little time for Underwood, and that's why they had to run those quick option type plays. It is frustrating because you felt like, okay, we're not opening up the playbook. We're not letting the five-star do his five-star things, but, I mean, it really didn't have any time. And then given that in with everything else that was happening, your injuries, your getting pushed around, you got bullied in this game. Like, I don't want to gloss this over because a bunch of Michigan slappies are talking like you lost. You lost that game. And there are plenty of reasons why you lost that game. And you're trying to take away positives. I want to shift this a little bit because I want to talk about like the idea of these non-conference games. I don't understand why everybody isn't putting in one Power Four non-conference game in their schedules. And I'll tell you why. Because I said this in my last point. For Michigan, you lose that game, it plays no impact for your conference schedule. All right, you got a loss. Yes, that should hurt you. That should go against you. But you win every game in your conference except one. Odds are you're playing for a conference title. And if you're playing for a conference title and you happen to win that, those two losses don't matter anymore. You're in the college football playoff and you're competing for a national championship. And if you win that Power Four non-conference game, that goes, and it has to go towards your resume. Well, look what they did early in the season. They went on the road against Oklahoma, and they beat them in a really hostile environment. And then it's like, okay, if they don't win their conference now, you've got that added to your resume compared to who else, you know, at the time does it. Like, I understand the Indiana strategy, like, oh, we're just going to follow what the SEC does. But to fans of the game, like, and, you know, we hate the fact that the SEC has that, you know, random cupcake game in the middle of November, and they've changed that as a conference. I think that's smart because in the grand scheme of things, this game, even if it's a loss, I don't think it hurts you as much as what the win will bring you if you win. You get what I'm saying?
100%. Oh, I totally agree with you. All of their conference goals are ahead of them. And now that the playoff is 12 teams and it's going to be at 16 teams, you can get in with three losses. That is a very real possibility. So, yes, non-conference Power Four games have to be a norm across all the Power Four conferences. Okay, let's zoom out a little bit. Let's talk about Alabama and Florida State. We won't focus as much, obviously, on the out-of-conference stuff. We will do this kind of quickly and then dive back into the rest of the Big Ten. But Alabama-Florida State, really my first and only question is, do you think the guy ate the
cake? He had to. But I don't know why he wouldn't have posted about it. He's like, hey, look, Florida State's turned it around. They're 2-0. I ate the poop, guys.
Do you think it was a shame thing? Like, he was like, okay, I didn't want to film it, and I didn't want to post it, but I just wanted to watch good football.
I mean,
that would be a real football guy move to do. Like, listen, I didn't want the credit and the fame or the shame. I just wanted to watch my team win football games.
Would you eat poop?
And so I ate
poop. See Michigan win a national championship?
What's doing the pooping?
Well, I guess in the dog poop, right? Okay, dog poop.
In this case, he said it was going to be dog poop.
Yours.
Whose dog?
Wow.
No, I wouldn't eat my dog's poop.
I actually don't want to answer this question. There's a lot of things I'd do to see my team win a national championship, but thankfully I didn't have to do any of those things because I don't make those types of bets.
And because our team
one
was
year.
Really good.
And now one they're year. Not so good. RIP, pour one out.
And now they're not. But we have a lot of money, so we should be good soon, hopefully. Okay. Yeah, Alabama looks fraudulent. Castellanos at Florida State looks freaking legit. He was selling merch, too, to back up all the trash talk that he did in the weeks leading up to that game. Because he said, if you missed it, that, quote, they don't have Nick Saban anymore to save them. I don't see how they're going to stop me. And then he made T-shirts after the game that said, Nick can't save you, and was selling them on his website. And they were sick shirts. I almost bought one, but I did not. But, yeah, Florida State looks legit. They look like they are going to be contending in the ACC, and Alabama looks like they have an identity crisis. And then stories started coming out after the game from boosters of like, listen, I'm one of those boosters that, like, you know, I'm very close to the team, and like I hang around the team hotel and stuff like that. and they were saying it is not uncommon, and it's happening a lot, that there are people roaming in and out of the hotel. There are kids ordering food at 1 or 2 in the morning, like friends visiting the hotel rooms. Like, it just seems like the entire operation is not buttoned up at all. And that was from a donors, alleged close donors who are close to the program. But Corey, I also heard that rumor from other places before the bowl game against Michigan last year too.
I understand it, but at some level, like, all the message board stuff, we are in the age of like the message board truthers. Like, at what level does it become so gross? Like, I mean, like, I, especially during the whole sign stealing thing, like just hearing like, oh, like insider scoop from Shem Beckler Hall. It's like, guys, we need
Ryan
to, we
Day's
need to
brother.
I will say, I think there's number one, the Alabama job following Nick Saban is just about impossible. And the Patriots did something really smart post Belichick, albeit kind of gross, with Gerard Mayo. He was the scapegoat, so that the next person who came in wouldn't have to follow Bill Belichick. They just have to follow, because he was only there for a season, and it was bad, but the team was decimated. And now you get Mike Vrabel with a clean slate. You probably buy him a couple of years, too, because he's a Patriots guy. Like, who on?
Right.
So was Mayo, though. But still, like, you needed someone. So for, like, Alabama and Kalen DeBoer, like, the expectation of national championship or bust is impossible for even anybody. I mean, even Ryan Day, like, he won his first this past year. Like, this idea that Alabama was not going to skip a beat after literally the greatest college football coach of all time leaves your school, like, that's like, we need to take a step back and say, do I think that the good times we're going to keep rolling? And if you say yes, I do, then you need help. Call the number on the gambling hotline, even though you're not gambling. Call alcoholics, and call every number, because you, sir, are sick. You're very sick.
The good thing for Alabama is they have a right game against Wisconsin this week.
I don't know what the spread is yet, but that game, I'm taking Alabama. I don't care.
What do you think
Alabama's
the spread is?
Home.
Alabama's at home.
Because it's a power four, I'm just going to say 28.5.
Oh, wow. No, it's 21.5.
Hammer Alabama.
Hammer Wisconsin? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Hammer
I was thinking
Alabama,
of the opposite
sure.
way.
I mean, Fickell is – you want to talk about two coaches that seem to be non-culture fits?
Fantastic.
DeBoer at Alabama and definitely Luke Fickell at Wisconsin. Those guys could be good coaches elsewhere. Obviously, DeBoer was great at Washington.
I feel like Fickell is going to be one of those head coaches, almost like an Ed Orgeron or a Lane Kiffin, where like he'll be much better at his next head coaching job. Because I think right now, if he had started his tenure at Wisconsin trying to do what he's doing now, which is get back to a more traditional Wisconsin identity, and he had skipped over all that dairy raid stuff, I feel like he might have been okay. But because he came in, it's almost reminiscent of what Rich Rod did at Michigan. He came in and tried to totally flip the program on its head, and no one at Michigan was going to be patient enough to let him do that. And so we kicked him out the door. And I think that's what's going to happen to Fickell. Not that he's a bad football coach. I think he's a really good football coach, but I think this is just probably going to go, he's going to file this one away in the back of the brain and learn some lessons for his next job.
I agree 100%.
Other stuff that's happened in 2 weeks. We had Catholics versus convicts. I had way too much trust in the Catholics. The convicts came out on top, and that Miami defensive line looks nasty. And Carson Beck almost cried in the post-game on-field interview. He was so happy. Miami will also be a contender in the ACC. The ACC
It's looking a lot better than people thought it was going to be.
Yes, they thought it was going to be freaking Clemson and then a gap to tier two.
Not
and then
they.
A further gap and everyone
you,
else.
You thought that. You were ready.
Other people thought that too. Clemson was not an uncommon natty pick. Not that I picked them to win the natty. Yes, I think.
Clemson could probably win the ACC.
Just like. Yes, thank you. But at least it does seem like more of a three-horse race now. But the most impressive part to me was Miami's defensive line. But also, I hated Notre Dame's game plan of like, hey, we have a redshirt freshman making his first start of his collegiate career, and it's on the road against a top 25 opponent. And we also have a preseason All-American at running back. I think we should put the game on the quarterback's shoulders. Like, Jeremiah Love had four touches deep into the third quarter. And it was like, what are you doing? Like, feed that man the football.
Yeah. I don't really know why they were I feel like Jeremiah Love was hurt. Like, that has to be the explanation of why he wasn't getting the touches. And honestly, I would disagree. I thought that they kind of uncorked the game plan for CJ Carr as the game progressed. Like, it was pretty simple play calling for the most part, and then you got a few, like, quarterback design runs or some options, RPOs, whatever you want to insert strategery here, because CJ Carr had that huge touchdown run towards the end of the game to really put some pressure on Miami. But as far as who needed it more, it was Miami. Miami needed this game way more than Notre Dame did, because Notre Dame loses a game every year, and then they win every other game. And then they're like, ah, they're a national title contender. Now they earned it because they made it all the way to the title game last year. But I want to, you know, go back to the point. Like, when are we going to start holding Mario Cristobal accountable for not winning anything at Miami? And this was a game that they needed to have, because I feel like if they lost this game at home, then that seat does get pretty hot. But now you're in the conversation for the ACC title game because you have an impressive home win there. Now we'll see how the rest of it plays out. And then when, you know, our USF Bulls go into Miami and get and punch it to them. Yeah, it's this week. This week. Bulls.
Baby.
Roll Bulls. Bulls of the CFP. Which they still could. They still
Bulls.
Could. Even if they
Ole.
Lose. This game. Could win the American.
Oh, absolutely.
Get on going.
Could. Anything else nationally to talk about? I mean, Arizona
Crazy
State
game.
Lost to Mississippi State. That's obviously a big deal. But again, to your point, it's an out-of-conference game, so all of Arizona State's goals are still ahead of them. But just an insane
I think after
game,
that game, it's going to be really hard for the Big 12 to get more than one team in the college football playoff.
Bro, my...
Unless Iowa State runs
Did I tell you? Did we go conference by conference and pick our chips?
We were horrible planners, and a third of our podcast is not even present right now. So, and we missed a week in the season that we talk about. We're terrible podcasters. Maybe that's the episode of the episode title this week is this terrible pod.
Yes, just we are horrible podcasters. Yeah, that is true. But I don't know how much credence this has now that I'm vocalizing this after week two. I had Iowa State winning the Big 12 before the season.
Dude, Army beating Kansas State and Kansas State only having 8 possessions that game.
Bro, Kansas State
this
is
down the Big 12.
Bad.
What you expect to happen in the Big 12 couldn't be further from the truth. What you think will happen,
crazy.
The exact opposite will happen. It's insane.
Okay. Back to Big Ten. Who should we talk about? I guess we can talk about Iowa State adjacent. Iowa loses the Cy-Hawk trophy for the second year in a row. It actually might be
it's
more
three
than
of,
that. I
it's
just,
three of four.
That's off
but
the top
Iowa
of my
State
head.
Has won the Cy-Hawk trophy.
And I guess it's the first time that Matt Campbell has won the Cy Hawk at home. He had been winless at home against Iowa, which is kind of crazy. To me, Iowa still looks good.
It's the same. It's, there were, it, Alex, it's don't kinda, do it.
No. Okay, I need to very carefully phrase what I'm about to say, because Iowa's quarterback, Gronowski. What's his last name? Is it Gronowski? Gronowski was getting raked over the coals for the way he played in the game. But put yourself in the frame of mind that I was in. I was watching Iowa. So I'm not used to a lot from the quarterback position. And so I had the thought in my brain while I was watching Gronowski play. I thought, watching Gronowski play football is fun. Now, I think if I was in a different frame of mind and I was watching literally any other football team, I may have felt differently. But again, I'm watching Iowa, so watching a quarterback who does things is fun. And that's the bar for fun Iowa quarterback play, is does he do things? And he did things.
Expert analysis from Alex Day. This quarterback, he does things. He does things that other quarterbacks don't. And you know what? They still lost. Listen, this is what's going to happen. Iowa is going to finish 8-4, and they're going to get in a New Year's Day bowl game. That's what's going to happen. They're going to get a New Year's Day bowl game against another 8-4 team from the SEC. And we're going to watch it because we're sickos. That's what we're going to do. Alex, yeah, this is what I'm going to do for you. Okay? I'm going to pick three games for us to pick. This is our universal picks.
Okay.
And then you're going to pick three additional games of your choice. And I'm going to pick three additional games of my choice.
Are we going national slate? We're going to go Big Ten, or just Big Ten
for our personal games. And then I'm going to pick the national slate games, okay? So to close out this episode. All right, so starting with a big one and a game that we have already talked about initially. Actually, we won't start with that one because it's at a different time.
Oh my
Georgia travels to Tennessee. In the first big SEC clash of the season, Georgia is a 3.5-point favorite on the road.
You're as smooth.
Alex Day. Whoa, easy. This is a family show. Alex, give me your thoughts. What are we thinking?
Georgia on the road at Tennessee. Tennessee's quarterback has looked freaking good. Aguilar is nice, and if you've watched UCLA play,
not nice.
Their quarterback has not been good. Not nice at all. It feels like Tennessee got the better of those two trades. Quick Big Ten sidebar, UCLA is probably the most disappointing team in the Big Ten, right? They're so bad. They lost to Utah, like not even close. It was going away. And then they lost to UNLV, who was in a dogfight with Sam Houston State the week before. So UCLA vibes are down in UCLA. Vibes are very down. Georgia is also breaking in a new quarterback, Gunnar Stockton. Georgia has been very committed to the run so far early in this season. Haven't been tested. Georgia's -3.5 on the road. I'm taking points there. Give me a home underdog that has looked really good and already built some confidence under a new quarterback.
Alex Day, I agree with you here. I think Aguilar has been the dynamic playmaker that Tennessee needs on the offensive side of the ball. Tennessee still keeps their identity with a very heavy run offense. And just as a first true test for Georgia, yep, this early in the season, they usually don't travel on the road in the SEC very early. Ethan would probably be saying Vegas is begging you to take this line, but based off of what I've seen from this Tennessee team and based off of, albeit looking at some of the scoreboard watching for the Georgia team, I'm going to give the edge to seemingly the more battle-tested team and the home team in this early, early season in Tennessee. So we have a maybe super lock. All right, and we've already been talking about this. Top 20 matchup. South Florida travels to Miami, 4:30 p.m. Guess what network this is on, Alex Day? The CW. Do you ever think they were like, oh, we're going to get this crappy TV deal. We'll never get a top 25 matchup. And lo and behold, the South Florida Bulls travel to Miami Gardens.
Who's the broadcast team? Like, it's going to be no one we know, right?
The spread is 17.5. So Vegas definitely does not believe in the magic that the South Florida Bulls are putting on. Listen, this coach that South Florida has, this isn't just like a flash in the pan type of thing. This guy has played Alabama super tough. Nick Saban's Alabama super tough 2 years in a row. Okay. And now that they have this big SEC win against Florida, they travel to Miami again. He knows how to get these guys going for these big games. Now, I'm not promising a win, but I think that spread is a little ridiculous, especially with how tight they kept a five-star DJ Lagway in the swamp. So will Carson Beck, who's an experienced passer, be able to stop the magic? I think Miami does win, but that spread seems a little too much, don't you think?
It does seem like too much, but that's exactly why I'm going to go with Miami. Like, it's too suspicious. I kind of assumed it would be double digits, but I thought it would be like 10 or 11.5. So if I were to follow my logical thinking, I would take South Florida, but I'm not going to do that because most of the time my logical thinking loses me money. So I'm going to take Miami because their defensive line tore apart Notre Dame. I think they're going to do that to a lot of people, South Florida included. Give me Miami -7.
All right, and maybe one of the biggest games of the weekend. The Texas A&M Aggies travel to South Bend, Indiana for a matchup with the Fighting Irish. The Aggies are a 6.5-point underdog. Notre Dame is given -6.5. Alex, what say you about this matchup?
This one is tricky. I didn't love Notre Dame's game plan, like I talked about, against Miami. But even though I didn't like the game plan, I thought CJ Carr played well. He showed a lot of promise. Notre Dame is at home. Give me Notre Dame to win by a touchdown.
I am going to take Texas A&M to cover the spread. Simply because now you just asked CJ Carr to go on the road to Miami. His first two college football games are against two top 25 teams. I would like to know the stat of the guy who is the player who had to play the most games against the top 25 to start their career.
Notre Dame already had a bye week.
They already had a bye week, so their very first. That. They haven't even won a game yet, and they're still in the top 10. I do think they win this game solely because Marcus Freeman, albeit they've had some pretty head scratching losses, they do tend to play better at home. I'll just say this: if you are not from the Sun Belt or the MAC, you're not winning in South Bend in the Marcus Freeman era. I don't really have much analysis other than this is my gut. I don't think that Notre Dame starts this season 0-2. I think that's just an absolute disaster for them, especially coming off of a national title appearance. So I'm going to take A&M to cover, but I still take Notre Dame to win this football game. All right, Alex, do you have your two pick or your three picks for me from the Big Ten? I can give it to you right now too.
Yes.
And I can give it.
I'm gonna go ahead. Give it to me right now.
The disgusting numbers. This is what I'm gonna give you. I'm picking exclusively.
You're gonna pick exclusive,
and that's fine. We can match up. I'm picking exclusively spreads that are over 21 or not 21 points. Actually, I don't even know what I'm talking about because I'm not. I want to pick this game because I'm just on the UCLA is trash bandwagon. The Friday night game at 10 at a 10 p.m. kickoff. UCLA hosts New Mexico. And I don't know if this is just because I'm a Michigan guy, but I think New Mexico is fairly okay.
It is.
And UCLA beating anybody by 15 points just seems absolutely outrageous to me. So I like the Lobos in a Friday night matchup to make things a little interesting. UCLA, you better win this game if you want to stay in the Big Ten. We might kick you out, but I think New Mexico pulls out a W and covers the spread. UCLA pulls off the W, but New Mexico makes it really, really interesting. I think that if there's like a spread where you could get that within a touchdown, I would take that. That's my expert opinion. Number two, we talked about it already. Hammer the Crimson Tide against Wisconsin. Wisconsin right now is a dead, D-E-A-D, football program. They are dead. You're going to have to ask them to go into Tuscaloosa and try to win. I don't see that happening at all. Alabama rolls that Tide and they come away with a statement win against a dead football program. Alex, do you remember a couple of years ago whose bandwagon I was on? And I kept the faith even though they had head scratching losses throughout the entirety, and I kept saying, guys, the pathway to the Big Ten championship game is still on the table from the team from West Lafayette. USC travels to Purdue in a 3:30 kick. USC is a 21.5 point favorite. This is not the Purdue team from the Aiden O'Connell era, and it is definitely not the Purdue team from last year. That's a ridiculous number. I'm believing, I'm putting my foot down. The bandwagon train for the Boilermakers starts here and now. Are they going to lose this game? Yes, but they are not.
It won't be by 22.
It's going to be by like 17.
Oh my gosh. Okay. All right, let me get to mine. We're only going to have one in common. I am also going to back Alabama minus 21.5 for all of the reasons that you said. I am also going to take Oregon minus 27.5 at Northwestern. I know it's their first road game.
So terrible.
Northwestern's so bad, and Oregon just feels like a buzzsaw right now. So I'm going to take Oregon minus 27.5. This one is the game I'm excited about picking. I am taking Cal plus 1.5. Minnesota travels over to California. It's a 10:30 p.m.
Gross.
Kick. It's a 10:30 p.m. kick, so I will not be awake to see if this bet cashes.
Will I be watching? No!
I will watch probably a good hour and a half of this game, maybe 2 hours if I'm lucky. But Cal has that very nasty looking freshman quarterback,
the lefty, who
looked so good last week. And Minnesota, and this is what Minnesota does. This is what PJ Fleck does. He beats Buffalo at home 23-10. You're like, okay, all right, the team looks pretty good. Then he crushes Northwestern State at home 66-0. And you're like, whoa, is PJ Fleck onto something? And then he follows up with, no, I am not up to something. So I think I'll take Cal plus 1.5. I don't think I'm going to take a money line, but it is one of those spreads where you're like, yeah, why wouldn't you sprinkle a little bit? So I don't know if I will do that, but Cal plus 1.5 is my last one.
And the woke Twitter like memes are also back. So
that's right,
ladies
baby.
And gentlemen, that's our episode. You got a little bit of picks, you got a little bit of a recap, and we promise that we will bring our very loud and obnoxious friend back into the mix once he is feeling better and not watching The Summer That I Turned Pretty with his wife. So reminder to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button on all of your favorite social media platforms, and give us some love. We'll give you a shout out. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Deuces.